we welcome Sharon Weaver as our speaker today. Sharon earned a master's degree in divinity at Vanderbilt University, and she has held work positions as a teacher, nonprofit worker, and college professor. Sharon currently operates a consulting company called Spiritual Care Providers. The title of Sharon's sermon is Readings from Wayne Mueller's Sabbath, How Can We Yet Rest? Let's welcome Sharon.
Good to be back, always. Well, let me set the clock here where I can see it, although Jim, you know it never does any good. I still have it up here. 20 minutes is what it's supposed to be. Oh, it's so good to see you all. I want to read a quick poem. It's very quick, just a little something. It's called From Ice Out, and it's by Jane Kenyon, and it speaks to how I feel this morning, I think how a lot of us feel. As late as yesterday, ice preoccupied the pond, dark, half-melted, waterlogged. Then it sank in the night, one piece taking winter with it. And afterward, everything seemed simple and good. So I don't know about you, but I'm grateful for the sunshine too, Jim. I'm grateful for the warmth coming in and the flowers blooming. I have a few of those up too, those daffodils. I want to revisit Wayne Mueller's Sabbath, and I want to revisit it a couple times. You can tell, you know, if there's any scriptural sort of sacred readings, this is it for me. This is what I base my work on and try to base my life on. I don't do a very good job sometimes. But Sabbath, meaning, yes, that's okay, it's my honey's phone. I've got an entire trip back to Franklin to talk about that. I'm kidding. I give grace freely with that sort of stuff. Anyway, Sabbath meaning rest. And he explains in his book the importance of rest and the importance of Sabbath and why throughout history of different religions taking time to rest was so important. And the Judo-Christian religion, really more the Judo, the Hebrew tradition, the Sabbath was to remain holy, and holy in the sense of is very took very seriously. Death was recommended to those who broke Sabbath in different parts of Scripture. And I think we're to take from that theologically that it was that serious, because death was meted out for a lot of things, you know, and this and that and whatever. But the importance was that it was taken very seriously, that you are to rest. And there were, at the times when slavery obviously was a part of the fabric of life, even the servants were to rest. The donkeys, the mules, the whatever, the animals of work were to rest. And so they took that rest very seriously, not understanding perhaps the neurological, physiological reasons that we have for rest, but understanding the results they saw and how they felt when there was rest and a slowing time for reflection, a gathering of the community and reflection, to the quiet voice for them to hear God, for us, depending on your faith beliefs, to hear ourselves, to hear our inner voices, to hear God, to hear a higher power, to hear just the rhythm of nature, what it is saying to us. So I'm going to do some readings in the next few times I speak, unless there's a groundswell of please don't. and some of it explains why we are sort of the way we are in this country. And we know the history of this country and the overwhelming, overwhelming push toward Christianity and whatever that means. and sometimes the worst of it. And in one of the chapters called Hurling Toward the Eschaton, which is the end times, Mueller talks about how in that theology, in that religion, there is such an urgency for saving those, for getting everyone on board, for making things toward the future, the focus on the future, the heaven, the kingdom, the life after, and why there's such a prevalent violence toward the life now. That this is not good enough. This is not how it's supposed to be. The life we're living now is not the life we're promised. The promised land is over there. Now that was understood, and you can understand that if you study the history of Christianity and when Jesus certainly entered into the picture. It was a mishmash of lots of prophet sayers of the end times coming. And so he entered and spoke against or had to swim in those waters. And so it became, with his disciples, a part of the theology, that urgency, that working towards something that's not yet, which leads to the violence of our life of working toward something better, which means that what we have now is not good enough. And that life, instead of being a cycle, has a very distinct beginning and the end will come. And it was believed the end was coming in Paul's time, in the disciples' time. And so, if not then, surely the next generation. And the next generation. And we all still have that because we swim in the waters of that culture that the end times are here, whatever, are coming. And there's an anxiety then built in. And it becomes, as Tillich says, an anxiousness. Paul Tillich writes as a theologian that we are an anxious people. And we are in the sense of that's what we've created. And Mueller pushes against that. There is quite a number of Christian theologians, which may surprise you, that push against that. Certainly are, not all, but a number of our pagan friends and our naturists push against that. There's many humanists and just secular writers, as they would say, that encourage us to live in the now. Encourage us to realize that there is the future is there, but what we have, what we really have today to influence the future, if you want to look at, but that's not the purpose, is the now, the moments that we have now, we create. And if you want to reach that kingdom, to use very old language, the kingdom is within us. It is within us. And arguably, that even one of the quotes from Jesus is, go into yourself if you want to find the kingdom of heaven. It is in you. And so, you know, that's very New Age-ish kind of talk, you think, but it was a new kind of theology then, one that has never really been meshed out because it doesn't fit with this theology of rushing and hurrying. And surely the promised land, those still waters that we will lie down and rest come only at death when we cross over to something better. I, for one, don't want to wait. And Mueller tells us not only do you not want to wait, he quotes Thomas Jefferson and says, you know, Jefferson even talked about the pursuit of happiness. We have that right, the inalienable right for pursuit of happiness. And the pursuit of happiness in the term can also mean peace. And he goes on to talk about that pursuit of happiness and happiness meaning attaining stuff, we think. And then ask, is that what Jefferson really meant? Attaining? Because the more we get, the more we want. The more we get, the more we have to pay attention to it. And the more we have to worry about somebody taking it, stealing it, and malfunctioning, maintenance, et cetera, et cetera. Paying for more of the stuff that can go with it. And so we get in this very violent cycle of attaining, which means if you listen to it, that we don't have. That we are incomplete until we do. So there's lots of good things in here I'll be fleshing out at later times, but I'm going to start with rest. And the book itself, which I recommend, it's a 1999 book, which it's as current as this very moment in my mind, talks about, gives a little bit of his beliefs or rationale, and he talks about practices and offers poetry and ways to go about resting. And I'll push back on some of it because I don't swallow anything whole, or if I do, usually I regurgitate it. Isn't that what some of us are here for? We swallowed a lot of the whole of the theological understandings only to go, this has made me sick. You know, no offense to any religion. Okay, it starts out with a quote. There is more to life than merely increasing its speed. Now that's Gandhi. This man did remarkable things, but yet he understood the importance of rhythm and ritual and rest and taking time. So I wouldn't argue with him that he did important things and didn't need to speed up and do more. September, I am surrounded by flowers, every day more flowers, until I beg the nurses to share them with other patients who could be cheered by them. A colleague from the AIDS clinic drops by to sing the Lord's Prayer in a rich alto at my feet. One visitor, a former client, brings me a tiny Buddha. An old friend brings me my favorite chicken enchiladas with green chili. Another sits beside me and, using a Tibetan practice, breathes in my suffering while he breathes out healing and strength for me. A neighbor brings me a picture of Our Lady of Guadalupe. My son brings me Gizmo, his favorite stuffed animal, to watch over me in the night. Many come, I find out later, and depart without waking me. I have no idea who came and who did not. I am exhausted. I cannot lift my head or open my eyes. I am close to death, infected with streptococcal pneumonia, a rare and often fatal bacterial infection. Jim Henson, the inventive puppeteer, died from this illness. I breathe only with great difficulty. I am on an emergency schedule. Every 4 hours, someone comes and gives me albuterol to inhale. Then I am tilted upside down by a respiratory therapist who pummels me on my back and sides while I lie with my head below my feet. They're trying to make me cough up the phlegm that is choking me to death. A month earlier, I'd been living a typical life, at least for me. I was seeing patients in psychotherapy, running Bread for the Journey, which is a charitable organization that he did to feed people. That's a simplistic way of looking at it, but it's the nonprofit he worked with. And traveling around the country, lecturing and teaching. When I was home, I served as the chaplain in an AIDS clinic in Santa Fe, and I was also finishing a book while trying my best to be a good husband and father. A month earlier, I'd put a quote from Brother David Steinelrest on my bulletin board. Life, he said, was like the breath. We must be able to live it in an easy rhythm between give and take. If we cannot learn to live and breathe in this rhythm, he counseled, we will place ourselves in grave danger. Here I am, exhausted, barely able to breathe at all. I'm attached and entwined. Long plastic tubes feed me nourishing fluids, antibiotics, and oxygen. Visitors each bringing their particular gift of kindness, both comfort and tire me. Even with dear friends, I feel the energy go out of me. The energy of attention, of listening to words, of being even marginally present. At the end of each visit, I fall immediately back to sleep before my visitors are out the door. I had always assumed that people I loved gave energy, and people I disliked took it away from me. Now I see that every act, no matter how pleasant or nourishing, requires effort, consumes oxygen. Every gesture, every thought or touch uses some life. I'm reminded of the story of Jesus walking through a crowd of people. A woman seeking to be healed reached out to touch the hem of his garment. Jesus asked, "Who touched me?" His disciples said, "People are touching you all the time. What are you talking about?" But Jesus said, "I could feel the power go out of me." Deeply mindful of the flow of his life force, Jesus could feel the expenditure of energy in every encounter. This is a useful discovery for how our days go. We meet dozens of people, have so many conversations. We do not feel how much energy we spend on each activity because we imagine that we'll always have more energy at our disposal. This one little conversation, this one extra phone call, this one quick meeting, what can it cost? But it does cost. It drains yet another drop of our life. Then at the end of our days, weeks, months, years, we collapse, we burn out, and cannot see where it happened. It happened in 1,000 unconscious events, tasks, responsibilities that seemed easy and harmless on the surface, but that each one after the other used a small portion of our precious life. And so we're given a commandment, remember the Sabbath. Rest is an essential enzyme of life. As necessary as air. Without rest, we cannot sustain the energy needed to have life. We refuse to rest at our peril. And yet, in a world of where overwork is seen as professional virtue, many of us feel we can legitimately be stopped only by physical illness or collapse. My friend Will is a gifted physician who was always busy. When Will barely survived a massive heart attack, he used his illness as an opportunity to reevaluate his life and began to slow down, taking particular care to take time with his grandchildren. Helena is a passionate and driven massage therapist who found a lump in her breast and upon discovering it was cancer, began to paint and do yoga and nap in her hammock in the afternoons. Pamela, an overworked social worker, was nearly killed in a hit-and-run collision during her long rehabilitation, she began to listen carefully for those things that brought her nourishment and joy. She remembered times of prayer and worship as a child and felt comforted by fragrance of her early spirituality. When she recovered sufficiently, she entered the seminary and became a pastoral counselor. She now serves those in need with gentle enthusiasm. Dolores was a devoted psychotherapist with a thriving private practice, with far more clients than she could realistically serve. She was felled by a mysterious illness that left her weak and physically exhausted for almost 3 years. Later, with fewer clients and the fragrance of rest in her body, her ears and eyes have become like crystal. She hears and sees deeply into the heart of those who come to her. If we do not allow for a rhythm of rest in our overly busy lives, illness becomes our Sabbath. Our pneumonia, our cancer, our heart attack, our accidents create Sabbath for us. In my relationships with people suffering with cancer, AIDS, and other life-threatening illness, I am always struck by the mixture of sadness and relief they experience when their illness interrupts their overly busy lives. While each shares their particular fears and sorrows, almost everyone confesses some secret gratefulness. Finally, they say, "At last I can rest." Through a good friend and doctor who literally threw me into his pickup and raced me to the hospital, through the wise and swift administration of good medicine, through numerous prayers and great kindnesses, I was granted the blessing of being healed of my infection. Now I take more walks. I play with my children. I work mostly with the poor and have stopped seeing patients. I write when I'm able. I pray more. I try to be kind. And without fail, at the close of the day, I stop and say a prayer and give thanks. The greatest lesson I have learned about is surrender. There are larger forces, strong and wise, at work here. I am willing to be stopped. I owe my life to the simple act of rest. Now he finds his way to rest in different ways than perhaps we do, and he goes through so many different ways. One, lighting a candle and gazing at it, excuse me. So simple acts. But I wanted to share this with you, and quite honestly, I read this last night. I was sharing it with Rick, who is a busy doctor, and knows that I can tend to add to the stress sometimes by saying, you need to slow down. You need to slow down. One more need he has to meet. But I saw myself in here for the first time, and I can't tell you how many times I've read this, which is why we read things over and over, our favorite poems, or see a movie or read a book again and again. Something presents itself to us. And it was that sense of relief when you're sick, when you're forced to stop. I don't want sickness and illness to be my Sabbath, my rest. But yet, as you all probably, some of you recall, during one of the busiest yet worst years I've had, last year when my father died in February, Mom went into an assisted living, and Scott, my brother, my sister and I became guardians of, and we had to figure out the best place for him, and that was not, he's fine now, but it was not known at the time. And so my sister took him first to Charlotte while we tried to figure out how to pay for and manage all of this stuff going on. And I had some immediate needs that the IRS wanted done. Mom always said you shouldn't tell everything you know, but I do. So, and I recall sitting up trying to meet a deadline and getting very stressed with all this other stuff on me and saying, I can't do this. I can't do this. I can't do anymore. And it was that same month, maybe the end of the week, a week later, that my appendix burst. And I was hospitalized for the first time in my life for 8 days. And I'm reading this because I felt guilty. You know, I couldn't have control of my appendix, or I would have skipped it altogether, trust me. But because Scott had just arrived at my house, it was my turn to take Scott. And I love him. He comes every year, and most of you know how much I love him, but it was at a very, very stressful time. And so he came, and he was there. When I drove myself to the emergency room, I said, Scott, you know, eat your soup and I'll be back. And he was fine, and I called people, but I wasn't. And so my sister flew in from Charlotte and had to pick up Scott and take him back. And I lay in the hospital feeling so bad that had happened and so guilty. But then there were part of me was like, I can't do anything. I have to. That's what I have to do. And I felt grateful. And so when I read this, and I felt guilty for feeling grateful, and I thought to myself, I understand why people get into these psychological needs for doctors, for I'm sick, for give me medication, for give me drugs, for I'm in and out of hospitals and in and out of doctor's offices, because perhaps that's the only reason that they feel is a good enough reason to stop or slow down or not do. Can't take care of my grandchild right now because the doctor says I'm sick with this. Or I can't take care of my grandchild because I'm going in the hospital. Or I can't walk. Or a mother with overloaded with children or are just busy from work. Our work is not only what causes us the stress. And Mueller pushes back against that too. He reminds us that if we went to a monastery, they'd most likely hand us a broom and tell us to sweep the walks and find the zen in that, find the peace in the everyday task. So he's not pushing against work. He says it's the balance, that we're so out of balance, that instead of bringing joy and gladness into our work, we are just piling on more, and we don't have joy and gladness time at home or any other time for that. We push that back until we collapse. and it is forced upon us. And then, of course, like many of us, you feel guilty for taking that time, even if it is to heal, because you'll die if you don't. So I want to, during the second hour, talk about finding that rest, finding that time, some of the ways. We'll continue to do this and touch upon it. And I want a little pushback on that. It is something that we know is important, but we've got to figure out how to do that for everyone. He talks about you don't have to fly off to retreat. You don't have to quit your job. You know, take time. And it's very difficult to do if you're working 2 and 3 jobs, you know, or if it's very difficult if you're trying to manage so many things, so many children, or so many worries, or you really have concerns that draw you into the immediate, your health or the health of someone you love, your bank account or lack thereof, you know. So I want today, for those of you that are not going to be in the second hour, for all of us to walk through the door at sometime today, whether it's this door or a door, I want you to walk or be in a place where you stop for 5 minutes and just look. Don't try to think of anything. Don't look for anything. Just look around you and observe and be quiet. Some of you do that anyway through meditation. Some of you do that and have practices. A lot of times we say we have practices, but then we don't really practice our practice. So some small reminder, take a 5 minute just to breathe and to be aware and see how you feel. Make it to 10 or 15 if you can. And we'll continue the next time with the Sabbath. I hope you found that thought-provoking, and hopefully a little bit challenging, that you will figure out, I need to remind myself about that Sabbath. And in the meantime, enjoy the day. Thank you.